our last speaker for this session is Dr. Jacob Berkowitz, a research soil scientist with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Vicksburg, Mississippi. The talk is going to be development and application of automated wetland delineation data forms improves hydric soil identification. If you automate this, I won't be able to use them.
Oh, well, we'll get Brian to help. Thanks, everyone, for sticking around. We'll get you through this and get us out to lunch. I would just like to start by putting a plug in for submitting to S10, the Wetland Soils Division, in the Soil Science Society of America Journal. We have a great group of editors right now. The associate editing team is really good. Myself, Dr. Chang from Clemson, and Alan Wright. And so we really encourage people to submit. We have seen a slight decline in submissions for S10. So especially some of these wonderful student presentations that we've seen this morning, Nia, Brian, Sarah, others, we'd like to see those come in to the journal and support the society through publication in SSSAJ. So that being said, we've heard a lot of great talks this morning about biogeochemistry and wetlands and the effects of different impacts on wetlands and the ability of wetlands to help improve the environment, whether it be through nutrient reduction or other means. And so it's very fitting to finish off the talk, the session of talks, with a little bit more applied science and talking about, well, how can we improve the identification of wetland resources? Because if we can't figure out easily where the wetlands are on the landscape, then it's going to be hard for us to appropriately manage those wetlands. And so what we've been working on is a series of automated data forms for hydric soils identification across the country. And we'll see, we've come up with some interesting things here. I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Nathan Schultz, who's a wetland specialist with the Army Corps of Engineers, and he's located in Grand Haven, Michigan. And here we have some beautiful pictures of hydric soils. So how can we ensure that when we see these types of features in the landscape that they're being identified as wetlands or as hydric soils? Okay, so a little bit of background material. When we identify hydric soils in the field for the purposes of wetland delineation, we use the application of rapidly applicable field indicators of hydric soils. So we look for certain morphological characteristics in the soil profile to tell us, is this a hydric soil or a non-hydric soil? And those field indicators are all indicative and go back ultimately to the definition of a hydric soil. And so hydric soils are defined as those soils that have formed under conditions of flooding or ponding or saturation long enough to create anaerobic conditions in the other upper part. The reason this is important is because as we go to do wetland restoration, like Nia talked about, we want to identify areas where they were formerly wetlands. We can restore the hydrology. That's a good place to do it. Also, the last speaker talked about some of these drain farmed areas and ditches. And we need to be able to go back over time and see, did those soils form under hydric conditions, therefore being great places to conduct restoration activities. And just to give you an idea of the scope of this, how many times a year these sorts of hydric soil field indicator are used, it's estimated by the folks in Washington, D.C. that over 60,000 determinations are made every year in terms of the identification and delineation of wetlands, which always includes hydric soil determination. So we're talking about big, broad impact across the entire country. All right. For us, as an agency staff, most of the determinations for hydric soils are done by the consulting community and by agency staff themselves, from the NRCS, Environmental Protection Agency, and the Corps of Engineers. Unfortunately, most of those people are not soil scientists. The vast majority of them have backgrounds in ecology or biology, but very few, probably less than 3% nationally, are actually soil scientists. So these non-soil scientists have some difficulty identifying hydric soils in a field setting. Okay. So as I mentioned, hydric soil indicators are all based on morphological features that we can see, touch, or smell in the field. Some of the predominant things that we look at is we look at the matrix color of the soil profile. And so we want to look for things like dark soils, which are indicative of organic matter accumulation. We also look for matrix colors that have been depleted of iron and manganese oxides, resulting in the development of a depleted matrix, or a glade matrix. And so at the top of the picture here, we can see some organic matter accumulation due to reduced microbial respiration, which occurs under anaerobic conditions. As we look down in the profile, we see some of the characteristic gray or even glay colors that are associated with iron and manganese translocation down out of the profile. The other things that we look for in hydric soils, in the application of hydric soil field indicators, is we look for redoxomorphic features. And so these are the characteristic iron and manganese concentrations and depletions that you can see lower in the profile, these rusty red-colored features that are forming due to the water table fluctuating and moving around those iron and manganese. In terms of texture, we largely focused on organic horizons in the presence of high organic, mucky modified mineral soil materials. Okay. The hydric soil indicators almost always are associated with some sort of depth requirement and location within the profile. Okay. And so you can see there's a lot going on here within these hydric soil indicators. We have matrix color, redox features, different textures, and these different depth requirements. So again, for a non-soil scientist, these can be quite challenging to apply in the field. And so what we'd like to do is develop these data forms to help the non-soil scientist get the right answer more often. Okay, so as an example of field indicator, here's a field indicator that applies almost across the entire country. It's called S5 Sandy Redox. And you look at the picture, and it looks like a hydric soil to me. It has low chroma background colors. It contains redox features. But in terms of the indicators, they have specific requirements. And so for S5 Sandy Redox, the requirements are that we have to have a layer or a horizon starting with 15 centimeters of the surface. It has to be at least 10 centimeters thick. The matrix chroma, or the predominant color, has to be a low chroma or chroma of 2 or less, and it requires at least 2% or more redox concentrations. Okay, so that's just an example of how the hydric soil indicators are organized.
Don't do that to me.
Almost lunchtime. All right. So in terms of our objectives for the automated data forms, we want to have a tool that improves the efficiency and the technical accuracy of hydric soil identification, again, largely for the non-soil scientist community. Okay. And so we were asked to develop automated data forms to assist agency staff and provide a learning tool for folks to help get familiar with these and use these out in the field or in a office setting. And then we wanted to test our forms to make sure they're working, which is good. So we were able to do that with an existing data set. So what we did is that we reviewed all the available forms out there. And so there's about 20 to 25 forms that have been developed by different groups, agency staff, private industry, and others. Some of those forms do some rudimentary calculations, but none of them effectively identify a large number of the hydric soil indicators. There have been a few groups that have tried, and we've beta tested several of them, and some of them are able to get the most basic hydric soil indicators without any trouble, but when you start to throw any complexity at the programming language, then smoke starts coming out the back of the computer, like I'm afraid the presentation projector is about to do here. So we're not happy with any of the forms. A lot of them are just fillable PDFs or very limited functionality. And so, so we looked at a variety of potential tools. We looked at doing computer software development. We looked at Python. We looked at this various different platforms that we could use. What we settled on was something very simple to all of us. We all use it, Microsoft Excel. And the reason that we ended up with Excel is because, number one, everybody has it on their computer. Number two, the Corps of Engineers and other agencies are not likely to stop supporting Microsoft Excel, which has been a problem with other products that we've developed. They work great, but then our IT folks stop supporting those products, then all that works for nothing. And everybody knows how to use Microsoft Excel,
I think.
The other objective that we had is we wanted the form to look exactly like the current data form, which you can see here. And so this way, somebody can use the form, print it off as a PDF, they have a record, it's exactly like what's in the administrative record currently. And so the things that we asked folks to provide to us to identify hydric soil indicators are the depth of the layers of the horizons, the matrix color, the redoxomorphic colors, their type, location, and the soil texture. So those five items are what we use to identify field indicators of hydric soils. So the field indicators, where they apply, is all based on the USDA's land resource regions and major land resource areas. And so we follow the same trend in developing our forms. So we cover the whole country, all 10 wetland delineation regions, and all of the associated land resource regions and major land resource areas. And so we try to do as much as we can with the functionality in terms of having drop-down menus and things for folks to use. And so here in this example, you can see that you select your land resource region, if needed, your major land resource area, and what state you're in, and that will generate the appropriate set of indicators for you to select from. Okay, getting a little bit more into the meat of this, the form requires people to enter the appropriate information in the appropriate format, which is a big step above some of the data forms that we see submitted now. And I'll tell you just anecdotally that I literally had someone fax me a data form that was a scan, and instead of filling out the hydric soils information, they had taken some soil on their thumb and wiped it across the soil portion of the form, scanned it, and submitted it. So I think we can do a little bit better than that. And so the form requires folks to record the depth. They have to record the soil matrix color using the Munsell color system, any redox colors that are present, and then everything else is drop-down menus. The redox type, concentrations, depleted or reduced matrix, the redox location, pore lining, matrix, or a mixture of two, the abundance, and the texture, whether it be loamy clay material, sandy material, or an organic peat, mucky peat, or muck. Okay. From that information, the form starts to do all the calculations. And the first thing that it looks at is it calculates whether the redox concentration, what the contrast is between the redox concentration and the matrix concentration. So is it a prominent difference, a distinct difference, or faint? Then through a series of yes-no questions and some, in my opinion, I didn't do much, a lot of the programming in Excel, but it seems to me like very complicated queries in Excel. It calculates the hydric soil indicators based on the user inputs. And so which hydric soil indicators are met receive an X in the appropriate place. In this example, we have a hydric soil. It meets two of the indicators, A11 depleted below dark surface, and F3 depleted matrix. Those also happen to be two of the most common hydric soil indicators in the entire universe. You can see that they are met, in fact. The top layer here is 2-1, which is a dark material. It's underlain by a depleted material. That's how we get A11 depleted below dark surface. And this second layer in itself meets the definition of a depleted matrix, and so, in fact, it meets indicator F3, the depleted matrix. The data form will also suggest potential indicators that may be met based on the information provided. And so, for example, here, the data form has produced a question mark next to the field indicator entitled redox depressions. And the reason it puts a question mark there is because the data form does not know if that data was collected in a closed depression subject to ponding, which is one of the landscape requirements of that indicator. So what you can do as a user is if you scroll the mouse over this indicator, it will provide the definition for you there. Okay, so it's very interactive in terms of showing you the information that's required. So you scroll over F8 redox depressions, and it has the technical definition of that indicator in closed depression subject to ponding, 5% or more redox concentrations within a layer 2 inches or 5 centimeters thick within the upper 15 centimeters of the soil surface. Okay, so the profile description that we provided in this slide meets all the requirements of this indicator F8, but again, the computer has no way of knowing whether or not you're in a closed depression subject to ponding. Only we know that as the user. So a little bit of interaction there. The other thing that our data forms do that none of the other available data forms even attempted is that all the common combinations of indicators are included in this methodology. Okay, so for example, here we have two layers. The top layer is a dark layer that contains redox, and the bottom layer is a depleted layer, but neither of them meet the thickness requirements individually to meet a hydric soil field indicator. However, if you combine the thicknesses together, then they meet one. And so what the data form does is it suggests, question mark C, we think this is a good candidate for combining indicators. And then the user can go and look and see if that's appropriately done. Okay, so this is the sort of thing, a little bit more advanced analysis that none of the other previous attempts at doing this have gotten anywhere close to having that sort of functionality. So we're quite pleased with that. Like I mentioned, some of the data forms that we get are quite poor in terms of their accuracy and how the data is displayed. And so the data form will prompt the user to use the appropriate format and get things correct. So here we have an example where they recorded a layer from 5 to 4 inches and then down below from 1 to 4, and the computer says, no, that's not the way things go. Usually we start at the surface and move down. And so it highlights those. And also, if someone puts in an incorrect format for the color, it will come up with this box and recommend that they revise that. Finishing up here, we did test these. We tested them against 270 existing hydric soil determinations that were collected from all across the country, except Hawaii, who chose not to participate, too busy surfing, I assume. And the data forms did correctly identify all the hydric soil indicators that were seen there. 10% of the forms had some sort of problem. Either they omitted a hydric soil indicator as they were there, or they falsely identified one that wasn't there. So we had both false positives and false negatives. And you say, well, 10% isn't that much, but if you're thinking 60,000 forms a year, that's 6,000 determinations that could be incorrect. So quite a bit of impact here. And the automated form corrected all of those errors. Now, the form is not an ideal silver bullet for all situations. It does have limitations. We talked a little bit earlier how the form doesn't know if you're in a closed depression. And there are 6 other indicators. For example, positive reaction to alpha-alpha dipyridyl dye. The computer doesn't know if you had a reaction to alpha-alpha or not. And so some of them that require specific things that aren't involved in the normal data collection process aren't included in the forms. But we got 40 out of 46 automated of the field indicators, so I think that's a pretty good start. And just in closing, we developed these to support the agency staff, and our testing results with the non-soil science community seems very positive. People like these, they're doing well with them. Our goal is to have increased efficiency and technical accuracy, and so that this certainly supports that goal. The data forms also calculate indicators of hydrology and wetland vegetation. This is a soils conference, so we're focusing on the soils part. We do plan on revising these periodically based on the deliberations of the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils to keep them updated, and we hope to have these released for public use early in 2016, so they will be available for folks to use out there. And I appreciate everybody's time. With that, I hope we have time for some questions.
Yes, thank you.
And that's something that we can look at adding is having, you know, there is a redox selection for coated sands, but right now there's nowhere in the form to record whether or not you meet that 70% or more requirement for the coated sand particles. And so that's an additional add-on that we'd have to look at doing. What it does now is if you meet the requirements in terms of the matrix color and you have a sandy soil, it provides that question mark for S7 and S9. And the idea is that that's supposed to prompt the user to see if they have 7 out of 10 particles coated through a 10X hand lens. Good question. Sarah?
I have a question about, in the beginning you mentioned that only 3% of the crews are actually soil scientists.
Just totally made up that number. It's probably probably less than 3%.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, you know, if you could speak to why that is, I guess. Like, is it because the field crews are how they set up their out?
Well, that's a great question, and something maybe for the group to discuss in general. But I would say that so many of the folks that we get coming into the agencies, they have strong background in biology or ecology or related field. Most of them have had one class, maybe two soils classes during their undergraduate education, maybe a few more if they did a master's degree. But I just think the soils programs that are out there, you know, we see here at the meeting, you know, so much of the available funding for students is supporting the agricultural aspects, and relatively little is supporting these sorts of environmental aspects. I do think it's growing, and there does seem to be more and more interest. And the great student presentations that we had here today, I think, are indicative of this.
Yeah, I can think of a ton of people who would be interested in going out and doing these things.
And doing this, yeah. So I do think it's there. I think part of it is that, you know, the number of programs that are supporting that sort of environmental soil science could be growing. We could certainly see more on the educational end. Yes?
Aren't you afraid that automating this for the non-soil scientists is going to make more non-soil scientists out there doing this? I mean, in the state of Connecticut, you have to be a soil scientist.
That's correct.
So I would rather see us moving in that direction than in that direction.
I understand, and I don't disagree with your comment. There is a potential issue here for, you know, dumbing down the resources, and that's a big problem. Unfortunately, there are only a handful of states that require any sort of certification to identify hydric soils or wetlands in general. Anywhere in the country, if you want to do septic tanks or anything like that, you have to have some certification. But any Joe Blow off the street here in Minneapolis can decide that they're going to be a wetland delineator today and go out and do it and submit the paperwork.
No, this is a topic we could do in 2 days. discussion on to give time to some of the other speakers.
Absolutely.
I would like to open the floor for questions for any of the presenters today.
I think they're ready for lunch.
They're ready for lunch.
So that's one of the things that we certainly have interest in doing. The issue with this is funded by the agencies for the agency staff. And until those agency staff are all given an iPad or something like that, then we really can't justify putting resources into doing that. But I ultimately do think that's where this should be going. And I'm frankly hoping that the private sector will pick this up and run with it and somebody can make a bunch of money doing these things. And I will just like to say, as a follow-on, is that the majority of the agency folks who are using this form are not going to be out in the field scientists. They're going to be people who are in the office reviewing documents that have been submitted. And so from that perspective, that's true. My co-author, Nathan Schultz from Michigan, he literally does do this in the field. He has one of those little stools that old people use when they need to sit down at any time, and he takes it out in the field with them. And he does it on his computer right there. And he says it's faster than writing it down by hand. But he's a pretty fast typer compared to me. All right?
If you put on an app, I have to take my 8-year-old out in the field to help.
Yes.
Will we ever see an app where you can photograph the soil profile and have that analyzed?
That's another good question. And, you know, we've done some work looking at soil color and soil color change under different conditions, and Sarah's advisor, Marty Ravenhorse at Maryland, has done some things like that. What we've seen so far, because I have a colleague that says the exact same thing, let's do an iPhone thing and all this. From what my understanding is that the photographs that are taken by the iPhone, you know, we have a digital colorimeter, and if you compare the color spectrum from the phone and the digital colorimeter, there's a reason that the colorimeter costs $12,000 and the phone costs $100. So I don't think it's quite there yet, but I could certainly see that happening in the future.
Just a comment on that. There was a talk by Daniel Hermist in one of the soil surveying.
Ah, yes, Dan.
He's discussing how soil series and some of the data that's available, he wants to take pictures and we can actually quantify
yep.
soil color in that aspect. So if anybody's interested.
That's great. Yeah, Dan is a great soil scientist at the University of Kansas.
I need to make a few
Yeah, please.
Thank you, Dr. Berkowitz.